Morning.
While we're waiting for the slides to load, I'll give you a little plug. On the back table are some save the date cards for the next National Conference on Health Communication, Marketing, and Media. It's a conference that our group at CDC co-sponsors with a number of other groups. It's going to be August 11th through 13th in 2009 in Atlanta, as it was this past year, and we invite you to join us. And global health, communication, and marketing and media issues are definitely part of our agenda. So if this is an interest of yours, please join us there. Let me ask in the room, how many people here actually work in global health? Those whose hands are not up, how many of you want to work in global health? So, okay, so that's about everybody, all the other hands. So that's about where we are today in 2008 in public health. Very exciting time to be working in public health and in global health. Certainly a field that's growing dramatically, both based in terms of need throughout the world, but also in terms of the opportunities to make a difference. And I'm happy and thankful to also see that it's growing in terms of interest among students and among professionals. And really, I believe that all public health is global health, so I think it's terrific that other people are getting involved in this. I'm going to speak to you for about the next 20 minutes or so on some of the work we're doing at CDC, but not even so much going through details of our projects, but trying to lay out a little bit of a vision for you about where we think that is an area of global health that needs a lot of attention and growth. And it's an area I think probably many of you are interested in and working in or will be perhaps in the future. Of course, the necessary disclaimer, no relationships to disclose. In terms of the CDC, just to give you a brief overview first, I'm sure all of you have heard of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, headquartered in Atlanta, Georgia, but certainly working throughout the world. Our vision, our focus, our mission is the notion of healthy people in a healthy world through prevention, and that's grounded in the concepts of health protection, the idea which includes health promotion, disease prevention, and preparedness, and also health equity, and the issue of we have to address issues of health disparities and social determinants of health in order to achieve health equity, one of our really important strategic imperatives. Also, if I can give a second plug on the bottom of this, the Healthiest Nation Initiative is a new significant initiative that CDC is involved in with our partners, including ASTO and NACHO and many others, the goal of which is to demonstrate ways that we can make the U.S. a much healthier country in a healthier world. Despite the fact that we spend more money than any other country on health and health care, we're far from being as healthy as we need to be. So there's an alliance called the Alliance for Healthiest Nation. There's a website on the screen about this called healthiestnation.org. And even people working in global health, I encourage you to take a look at that and consider getting involved in it, supporting this really important initiative. Why does CDC work globally? I'm sure that this is not a difficult question for everyone in the room to answer. Clearly, it's in our own interest, in the U.S.'s interest, to have a healthier, safer world. We need to be able to respond to outbreaks. Certainly, outbreaks and pathogens that happen anywhere in the world certainly can come here. We care about them there, but we also care about them coming here. Supporting global disease control efforts is a big part of what we do at CDC. Eradicating diseases, certainly smallpox eradication being one of, if not the biggest, public health success story in history and one we really wish to emulate for many other diseases. Responding to emergencies and also eliminating global health disparities. Again, in an audience like this, it's pretty apparent that the importance of this work. Our work is grounded using a conceptual model of three goals in global health, about global health promotion and the notion that we do need to work not only in infectious diseases and disease control, but also in health promotion and disease prevention activities in our work. Global health protection and the notion that diseases don't stop at borders, illnesses and health emergencies don't stop at borders, and also the idea of global health diplomacy and the fact that public health efforts to promote economic and national security interests really do contribute to sustainable political, economic, and health systems, which are all of our priorities. CDC is throughout the world. All the countries in orange on this slide represent places above and beyond the U.S. where CDC has staff. We have people in more than 200 CDC full-time employees assigned to more than 54, to actually exactly 54 countries. About a little less than 20% of our overseas staff are based or seconded to international organizations like the WHO and others. Much of our work is done in Africa, largely due to the PEPFAR initiative and the funding that's consistent with PEPFAR, but we also have a strong presence in East and Southeastern Asia, as well as South and Latin America. We do, beyond our CDC employees based around the world, we also do employ locally employed staff. Foreign Service nationals, as well as more than 6,000 CDC employees, mostly based in Atlanta, do temporary duty assignments throughout the world each year to support the work we're doing globally. This graph shows you the last 5 years, fiscal years of funding spent on global health through the CDC. And you can see the yellow bars represent PEPFAR, which is the Presidential Emergency Program for AIDS reduction, is that the R? Nonetheless, very, very important work. And you could see that there's growing support now for global malaria, global and other diseases as well. And so you could assume that based on where the funds are, approximately the type of work that CDC is doing in other countries largely mirrors where the funding, how the funding is represented. One important thing to note, of course, is that FY 2009 projections for FY 2009 are flat compared to where 2008 was, which of course gives all of us a lot of concern in light of the fact that these problems are not getting better, despite a great impact that we're making in many places. The costs of doing this work continue to rise, and we have concern about our ability to continue to do them without increased funding. Our global health core competencies that ground our work at CDC, all of our global work at CDC, and I should also note that I'm the director of the National Center for Health Marketing at CDC, which is one of CDC's newest centers. It's cross-cutting. We work with all of the other national centers on all different issues, domestic and global. But a lot of the global health work at CDC is run either through the Coordinating Office of Global Health, which is led by Dr. Stephen Blount, as well as embedded in all the other national centers. So, for example, the Global AIDS Program is in the National Center of HIV, AIDS, Viral Hepatitis, TB, STD Prevention, otherwise known as NCHHSTP, led by Dr. Kevin Fenton. And so we do collaborative work with all of them in terms of global health. But what you'll see if you look at this list of core competencies is the fact that the global health core competencies at CDC are largely grounded in traditional public health functions, so surveillance and strategic information systems, translation, implementation, operational research, laboratory systems, public health workforce development, and emergency response. So, of course, that begs the question, well, where is the work we're here to talk about today in terms of health communication and marketing and media? And the reality is today it's still not considered a core function, a core competency of our global health work yet in these areas, but it certainly is emerging and growing as an important area. And if you think about how does health communication, marketing, and media at CDC support the billions of dollars being spent on global health, it actually supports all of the areas. It's set up in such a way that the work we do in health communication and marketing and media globally, one of our primary functions is, in fact, to support all of the other areas that CDC is working. And I'm going to give you some examples of that in a moment. Within our center at CDC, we have a global communication and marketing team. we have three core goals or core functions of our work in the health marketing center. The first is to use expert guidance in health communication and marketing and media to support the rest of CDC's programs. So working with the Global AIDS Program, working with global malaria, working with other activities, global disease detection is the primary place that we're doing a lot of work. And that's really our primary goal. Our secondary goal is to help develop in-country capacity in health communication, marketing, and media. Again, this parallels CDC's goal in many of the countries where we work. So, for example, CDC has a very well-established program called the Field Epidemiology Training Program, or FETP. In some countries, we also have a laboratory training program. And one of our goals, one of our efforts, is to increase training and capacity building within countries with MOHs and others to build their ability to do health communication, marketing, and media. What's really exciting about this goal, I might add, is that the demand is enormous. The demand, unfortunately, far outstrips the supply of our ability to provide that support. And you'll hear from my colleagues and some of the great work that they're doing as well in this area. But it's very exciting to travel the world and meet with leaders from ministries of health and hear them talk about how excited they are, how much they need more support in health communication and in risk communication and health promotion. And the only hard part of that is that we really are not yet equipped or resourced to provide the level of support that we'd like to. And then last but not least is the notion of implementing and evaluating innovative projects and studies, advancing the science and practice of public health. In essence, we are very new to the game of global health communication, social marketing. Many people, including the Hopkins Center and others, many exceptional contractors and consultants have been in this space for decades. It's not our intention to duplicate ours, meaning CDC's, intention to duplicate or try to create redundant programs to the many that already exist that are terrific. What we see as our niche is really emphasizing and exporting, if you will, our expertise, particularly in new media and e-health and risk communication, which are all areas where CDC excels and has excelled for quite some time. If you look at our programs, we have a number of projects, modest-sized projects underway in a number of countries. I'm not going to go over all of them for you. Here's some pictures and examples of some of the things we're doing, which involves infection control in Kenya, for example, using both very traditional health education measures like posters, as well as more sophisticated measures. For example, we're setting up a VSAT internet connectivity to regional provinces and hospitals in Kenya to allow them to connect to the internet to use those as forms of infection control and reporting as well. In Kenya also, you could see the Nokia camera phone on here. We're doing a project that's being led by Danya International, along with a number of partners, Safaricom, Nokia, and Vaxiva, to look at ways of using video camera phones for mobile direct observed therapy for TB. It's a little efficacy study that's being led by Danya that we're collaborating on that is a really sophisticated way of trying to bring new media, new technology to traditional public health problems. We're working a lot in China as well. We probably have more programs in Beijing and China than any place else. We have full-time staff in China from the CDC and primarily working in risk and emergency communication. Though the photo on the bottom left is the Chinese emergency and risk communication guide that's being developed with our collaboration and input, and it's going to be shared with all the provinces. And this will become the playbook, if you will, for emergency risk communication. We all know, even in recent weeks, about the number of major public health emergencies and outbreaks and challenges that are happening all the time in China. And so it's really very important and exciting that their Ministry of Health and others in their leadership, both China CDC and China MOH, very much realize the importance of emergency risk communication and the transparency and public engagement that goes along with that. One of the work we do at CDC, the work we do in health marketing, is very much grounded in the science and principles of communication and marketing. And the next two slides are some of the really fundamental trends and changes happening in the worlds of communication and marketing and media that grounds our work both domestically and globally. And bear with me, this slide has a lot of pictures and flying arrows and stuff on it, but really what this represents, though, is the fact that communication in the world, certainly in developed countries, but developing countries too, is shifting in terms of who are the trusted sources. Very much moving from what used to be a very much of an expert model. So the doctor, the company, the government would basically communicate to the public using traditional media to tell people what they need to know, what they need to do. So using things like newspapers, magazines, billboards, public service announcements like McGruff the Crime Dog and others to basically give an expert message out to the public about health information, about public health, about prevention. And we would consider this vertical communication because it's from an expert to a lay receiver, top-down type of model. And that's been the way that, you know, the government, that's been the way that authorities have communicated with publics for, you know, probably thousands of years. In many respects. But what's happening today, in part driven by technology, is the fact that, what's driving the change, in part is technology, but it's also the fact that authority figures are not nearly as trusted as they used to be, or as we used to be, in terms of the government. And data, time and time again, are now showing that people much prefer to receive information, they trust information much more from people like themselves than they do from authority figures or from the government, et cetera. And so what's happening is, this notion of social media and social networks is becoming much, much more powerful in its ability to influence and reach people. And social networks are not new, I might point out. Social networks were not invented with Facebook or MySpace. Social networks largely have existed, I think, since humans walked upright. We organized ourselves in social networks and communities of different people. The technology today, though, now allows us to connect with them much more frequently without the face-to-face or telephone contact. These are the sort of U.S.-based and Western-based channels that many people use for social media today, but it's not necessary to use these to engage in social media, horizontal communication. And we at CDC take the concept of aiming for what we consider the nexus or the sweet spot between authoritative, expert, credible communication, mixing that with social network communication in order to really maximize the impact of our messages. And if this is an interest to you, we can give you more examples of that. But the other thing that we are very aware of is that to create public health change, requires much, much more than communication or marketing too. And being the director of a marketing center in Atlanta, of course, we often take lessons from the biggest, most expert marketers in the world, not necessarily friends to public health, but very sophisticated communication and marketers in Coca-Cola. And back in the 1930s and 40s, their CEO, Robert Woodruff, had the insight that their product, Coca-Cola, should always be, in his words, within an arm's reach of desire. And it was this notion of place. It was this notion of proximity. And this business model for them drove not only their marketing and advertising, but it also drove their distribution. And so, you know, probably anybody in this room who is hankering for a Diet Coke right now could probably walk no more than, 50 or 100 yards from this room and go get one, because they have one of the most sophisticated distribution networks in the world. Why I think this is so important for public health, globally and domestically, why I think this is so important for health communication and marketing, is because we in public health have great products. Our experts, our scientists, do a terrific job of developing evidence-based products that save lives, whether it's HIV testing, voluntary counseling, whether it's disease prevention, physical activity interventions. We have terrific products. We have terrible distribution. We do a lousy job of bringing our products to people where and when they need them to protect and promote their health. And that's true domestically, that's true globally. And the way that this applies to us at the National Center for Health Marketing is our vision is the notion of a world where all people actively use accessible, accurate, relevant, and timely products, information, and interventions to protect and promote their health. And if you want to simplify that to more of the bumper sticker version, we really think about public health delivered where, when, and how people want it and need it to promote their health. That's the notion of place, that's the notion of marketing and communication and distribution, and that's where I think global public health really needs to go to have a much greater impact. And to that extent, we are very, very, very excited about mobile technology. We believe that mobile technology, cellular technology, domestically and primarily globally, is a game changer for health. And we go so far to say that we think this is the most important communication channel, communication modality, not for health communication, not for public health, but for health in the world right now. And really hope many of you are looking at this and beginning to examine ways to apply this to your work. Just coming back from Kenya a few weeks ago, I was very struck not only by the extent to which mobile technology is widespread there, but the extent to which it's being marketed. There are buildings painted magenta all over the country as Zain begins their big push into Kenya, Zain being a big provider there. And, you know, there are many other green buildings across the country for Safaricom. And someone told me this week that is an old strategy in the U.S. for how the tobacco companies used to sell the chewing tobacco products, is they would paint barns in the countryside, the colors and logos of different tobacco products. And this thankfully not used marketing strategy here anymore, is now a huge marketing strategy throughout Africa to promote mobile, and it's becoming very widespread. And you could see the United Nations and WHO has said many times about the importance of leveraging this technology. It can be used in so many different ways. Clearly, in very simple traditional public health ways of health promotion, behavior change communication, disease management, risk communication, and preparedness. And we have a number of pilots and efforts underway to begin to examine these globally. But what's really important too about mobile is the social aspect of mobile, the ability for people to connect with each other, applying it to things like commerce, applying it to things like education and empowerment. And texting is, you know, very, very common behavior among mobile phone users and in developing countries. And again, these are all strategies. We need to be careful. It's not the tail wagging the dog. It's not mobile's great, let's use mobile. It's we have public health messages and mission and need to reach and engage and communicate with and among different populations. And this is really an entree that we've never had before that really does cut across many digital divides, unlike the internet, unlike broadband and other strategies that really does not. So at CDC, we're doing quite a bit in mobile public health in a number of areas. For those people who are mobile web browsers, we have a CDC website now called m.cdc.gov, which is a mobile-based version of cdc.gov. But the main thing I want to call your attention to is on the bottom of the screen, which is the CDC Mobile Health Coalition. Any of you who are interested in this area or are already active in this area, we invite you to join the coalition to become part of our activities. And you can find more information at that website, www.cdc.gov/mobilehealth. And we have a meeting coming up in November, and there's quite a few other activities happening around mobile, so we do invite you to join us and really encourage you to get involved in this space. So in closing, we have a number of areas of future direction in terms of our work, primarily needing to find in-country staffing who can work in health communication and social marketing. So if any of you in this room are interested or know of people who are interested, again, it's an area of enormous demand and enormous opportunity, and we encourage you to both let us know and to pursue this as an area. Expanding technical assistance to other regions and countries. Again, mobile as a really potential paradigm shifter. And also really applying this overall, because we still do face the challenge that many people in global health and global public health, you know, they are coming around to communication, marketing, and media. They're coming around perhaps faster than some of our domestic colleagues in other areas of public health, but there still is a way to go to really recognize and embrace this as much as it needs to. So with that, I have some, in closing, really, when we think about embracing changes and the changes that we're facing now and in the future, I always look back to the Dalai Lama and his perspective on this, which is the notion of opening your arms to change, being open to change, but at the same time, don't let go of your values as you embrace it and pursue it. And with that, I'll say thanks so much.